Welcome to the AFP Report. This is your host, John Friend. Today is Friday, November 11th, 2022. This is the 27th edition of the AFP Report, a podcast series where I will be interviewing reporters and contributors to American Free Press, America's last real newspaper, as well as other special guests. Please consider subscribing to American Free Press if you are not already. Subscription details can be found at AmericanFreePress.net. And today I'm joined by James Edwards, the host of the Political Cesspool radio program and one of the most insightful political commentators in the alternative media. All right, James Edwards, welcome to the program, sir. How are you today?
John, I'll tell you what, it's been a busy week for people like us. This has been sort of like the Super Bowl, I guess, these election years. And this has been a pretty interesting midterm. And so I've been up late and been sort of wrapping my mind around the fallout over the course of the last couple of days. And I've got some takes on it that I hope that your audience will find interesting. Always a pleasure and an honor to work with you and the good folks at American Free Press.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you taking the time. And I have no doubt you have plenty to say about the recently concluded 2022 midterm elections and the political fallout. To kind of get started, I just wanted to mention, I'm sure most people listening are aware, but you are the host of the Political Cesspool, which airs every Saturday evening from 6 to 9 p.m. Central Time, I believe. And it is without a doubt one of my favorite broadcasts, and I look forward to listening each and every week. I actually subscribe on your RSS feed, so I get the shows just automatically downloaded to my phone. I find that to be a very easy way to, you know, to follow different radio programs. And again, there's a, you know, a the RSS feature right on your website. It's thepoliticalcesspool.org. And of course, I'll have that linked when I post this podcast program. You are broadcast live on AM 1600 in Memphis, Tennessee, I believe. And you're also simulcast on the Liberty News Radio Network's internet stream. Is that all correct?
That is all correct. You know, I'm a bit of a Luddite when it comes to technology. I'm 42 years old. I'm the world's youngest boomer when it comes to things like that. But just hearing you say all of that, John, made me proud that we lived this long. I guess that's one bit of progress that we can believe in. And it's relative ease that we have in getting our message out now compared to that of our forebears when paper flyers were the methods of transmission. So, yes, we have been on the radio for the last 18 years. As a matter of fact, we just celebrated our 18th year on the air just back at the tail end of October. And I got my start working for Pat Buchanan in his third and final run for the presidency in 2000, and then mounted my own campaign for the state legislature in Tennessee. And did just well enough in a losing effort to raise my profile a bit. Got a call to start a radio program in the fall of 2004, and I've been there ever since. And it led me to this day with you.
Yes, sir. Awesome. That's excellent. So 18 long years. Good for you, man. That's one impressive career to be in this business, no doubt. Also, I wanted to mention, I follow your excellent commentary on Twitter as well. And your handle is at JamesEdwardsTPC. That's an easy way for people to kind of stay in touch with what you're doing, you know, to get your latest takes and some articles that you post and stuff like that. So I wanted to mention that as well. And I'll, of course, have your Twitter profile linked when I post this podcast program. So with that said, I want to go ahead and jump right into the recently concluded 2022 midterm elections, which many observers thought would usher in a Republican sweep of both houses of Congress, which it appears that really did not materialize. That red wave we heard so much about leading up to the elections was mostly hype, it seems, or at least, you know, the red wave wasn't as great as many people believed. And, you know, I wanted to read actually a brief excerpt from an article published on the Substack Common Sense, which is ran by Bari Weiss, who is a former New York Times journalist, and I believe she was on the editorial board. She's probably not my favorite commentator, obviously, but the Substack Common Sense is pretty interesting. She features a lot of interesting writers, and this article was written by Peter Savonik, I believe is his name, and the title is "Election Night in Arizona: MAGA Is Not the Way It Used to Be." And this man was in Arizona following Kari Lake supporters in Scottsdale as the election results came in, and I believe that race is still up in the air, although she is down the latest numbers that I looked at anyways. And the article says here, It was supposed to be a red tsunami, not just a wave and not just the House, but the Senate, the governorships, the state legislatures. We were told it would be the end of politics of race, gender fluidity, drag queen brunches, undocumented workers, homeless encampments, Dr. Fauci, ESG, rhinos, followed by the rebirth of America First, Donald Trump's announcement that he would run for president, his 2024 victory, and a nationwide political realignment, which would be metabolic. That's not what happened. And he goes on to explain how early on in the night, Democrats basically won in a number of contested seats in Virginia, in Michigan, in Wisconsin. Well, they won, governorships in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. And then, of course, John Fetterman, the Democrat running against Dr. Oz for the Senate in Pennsylvania. He apparently came out on top, which I found incredible, frankly. And then there were some other Democrat victories in New Hampshire in the Senate and also in Colorado. Senator Michael Bennett won. So basically, it wasn't the red wave, at least to the extent to many thought and believed leading up to the election. So I'm curious, I mean, what explains this? What is your overall take on the recently concluded elections, which I should mention, there are still some races that are not totally determined as we're speaking right now.
I want to be careful how I present what's on my mind, to do it in some sort of a logical order, because there's just so many different angles that we could attack this on. I am not so sure, John, that what happened on Tuesday was not what is best for those who share our sympathies, those who are pro-white, those who are nationalists. And I'll explain that. In a way, there was a red wave. It just washed into the red areas. For instance, the red areas became redder. The blue areas became bluer. You mentioned some of those governorships that flipped. But in two of those states, you already had left-wing Republicans who were replaced by the genuine article. Obviously, what happened in Florida is a case of the red getting redder. In Alabama, you saw that too. I think that the country is just so balkanized that the red wave translated into bigger wins in states that they were already predominating, as opposed to sweeping over the entire country, which I don't know if that was ever really realistic. However, this was a win for the Republicans. This was a win. Before I get into that, though, let me just preface where I'm coming from as an individual. So I did go on Tuesday night. I always wait until Election Day to savor my vote. And I went and cast my vote to end democracy, as the Democrats were calling it. If you don't vote for them, you're ending democracy. And but I didn't vote for a Republican or a Democrat in Tennessee. I am pragmatic. If Tennessee had been a state where there were any contested elections, I would have favored a Republican candidate over the Democratic alternative. But just to let you know where I'm coming from and to prove that I'm not a Republican hack or seeing this through rose-colored glasses, I see it through a glass darkly. I believe that's a biblical phrase. But Tennessee is not competitive. It's a blood red state. I voted for an independent for governor and for Congress, and I voted for some ballot referendums, and I voted for nonpartisan races on a local level. Going back historically, I voted for Pat Buchanan as the Reform Party nominee. I voted for Michael Peruca and Chuck Baldwin as Constitution Party candidates. I voted for Ron Paul in Republican primaries. And then only until Donald Trump. Donald Trump was the first Republican nominee as, for lack of a better term, a right-wing guy that I ever voted for. So
he was the first Republican you ever voted for?
For president.
Yeah, yeah, that's the same for me, actually,
I'm coming at this from a right-leaning perspective, but I'm not doing it as a Republican hack, so I just wanted to preface what I'm about to say.
So
people will understand what I'm coming from. And I did have a much greater desire to see the Democrats lose on Tuesday than I did to see the Republicans win. I mean, I can remember going back to that night in 2016, watching the wailing and the gnashing of teeth on MSNBC and CNN after Hillary Clinton was destroyed. I mean, it really brought forth a euphoric rush of happiness. And I, for no other reason than that, I wanted to see the Democrats get wiped And so, yes, I went to bed on Tuesday night thinking, you know what, that's a little disappointing because everything was still very uncertain. But now 2 days later, I believe we've started to see things a little bit more clearly. I think overall it was a good night for the Republicans. Now, I just gave you a little bit of background on how I voted. So I'm not doing this as, a Republican partisan. You know, what we have now is a country that is so polarized. And I put this up, you mentioned Twitter. I put this up on Twitter today. I think that this election proves what we can see now is that no matter what, no matter how bad things are, this is a 50-50 divided country. And neither side is going to be pleased or persuaded. We need a divorce. And that was really proven true in the situation with Fetterman. I mean, this is a guy that is legitimately brain damaged and can, you know, we talk about Biden slipping into senility, which he obviously is, but Fetterman is a much younger man who had suffered a stroke and has all these medical conditions. He can barely speak a coherent sentence, and he got elected. They will absolutely vote for anything. There is no bridging this gap. We are not a collection of United States anymore. What we have now on the political battlefield is a pitched battle. It's trench warfare. The Fetterman situation really proves that. And yes, I you could argue that the Republicans underperformed. That they underperformed when you take into account the historical trends, that the party that's in power, or rather I should say the party that occupies the White House, tends to do poorly in midterm election years. So just based upon that sort of conventional knowledge, and then add to it the enhancements that you have record inflation, you know, the highest inflation in 40 years. You've got a crime wave that is really reached all-time levels. We're on the brink of nuclear war. These are all gifts that the Democratic Party has bestowed upon America. So you would think that with those enhancements, on top of it being an off year, that the Republicans would have done better. But then you got to think about this. I mentioned the polarization. I think the Republicans probably did well, considering the fact that the entire media array is aligned against them. You know, constant bombardment, with the exception of Tucker Carlson and obviously alternative news outlets like this. But in terms of the establishment media, the controlled media, 100% against Republicans. And for the most part, most of my life, that wouldn't be a big deal because they were really, truly just, as George Wallace called it, two wings of the same bird of prey, or two sides of the same coin, or whatever. But there is a difference now.
You know, real quick, I was just going to mention, speaking of that media coverage, the total bias nature of it leading up to the election, we actually have a brief item in this week's edition of American Free Press. There was a study by Media Research Center of election stories from ABC, NBC, and CBS. And out of over 100 stories published by these outlets, 87% treated Republicans negatively. Of course, the Republicans do not control the White House. They do not control the Congress currently. And they also focused on specifically the race for Arizona's governorship, pitting Kari Lake against – I forget the other guy's name that she's running against. It's actually Katie Hobbs. And it was 100% against Kari Lake. So, I mean, you see how biased the media is.
Yeah.
And that's no surprise to anybody listening to this, but – I mean, it's just like out of control how one way that the mainstream media is favoring the Democrats and treating any Republican as either like a MAGA extremist terrorist or a Nazi. I mean, that's the way like Republicans are presented these days in the mainstream media. It's absolutely disgraceful.
Oh, yes. I mean, if you're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or Paul Gozer or anybody like that, really all of them, really all white people now and all Republicans, but especially some of those that I mentioned. And yeah, so there you go. I mean, you've got, and normally that wouldn't bother me. I mean, it's just par for the course. It's to be expected. But prior to 2015, it didn't matter because the Republicans really were only marginally different and certainly hardly even that on the issues that matter most to us. But John, there has been, whether it be by design or inadvertently, Donald Trump has ushered in a radicalization in the best sense of the word of the Republican base. The Republican base has really moved to the right, especially in the last 2 years, on even racial issues, on all of the issues that would be of importance to somebody listening to this broadcast, the Republican base has moved in our direction, and you are now beginning to see some members of the Republican Congress moving in our direction too, and saying so, using terms like anti-white, using terms, you know, saying things like Marjorie Taylor Greene does with regards to white men being the most savaged and discriminated against in the nation, and things like that. So there is a difference, and it's becoming more apparent as with each passing month that there are elements of the Republican Party that are moving in our way that would make us a little more sympathetic to their lot and the health of what's going on there. But getting back to what happened on election night, typically, again, with regards to the economy, if the economy's stupid, well, that doesn't hold true anymore when you have so many people out there, particularly those who vote for the Democrats, who have no intention of working and are supported by the taxpayer. So they're immune to a recession. I think that's a big reason why there wasn't a little bit more of an anti-Biden surge. And then maybe the fact that the Supreme Court overturning Roe versus Wade motivated some Democrats to come out. But really, I don't think there's a lot of evidence of that. There were some Republicans running on hardline pro-life issues that continued to win. It was, again, a case of blue states and blue districts getting bluer and red states and red states districts getting redder. But I think you can't say that it was a great night for the Democrats, because here's where we stand now. OK, the dust has settled, and maybe you could argue that the Republicans didn't get a big win, but it was hardly a win for the Democrats. Maybe the Republicans underperformed compared to expectations, but the Democrats are absolutely going to lose the House of Representatives. And I think they're going to lose the Senate, too. I think it is a slight lean in favor of the Republicans that they take the Senate. At the very least, I think it's going to be a maintaining of the status quo, where it's 50-50 as it is today. And I would say again, though, that there is a difference, and that we should care about such an outcome, and have prefer the Republicans to win. Because you certainly don't want the disaster of the Democrats holding the House and the Senate, where they could go in and stack the courts and have this filibuster, continue this war, and things like that. So
sure, yeah.
I think that what you were mentioning, Carrie Lake, it looks like she is going to win. She is still losing. But this is another thing that I guess we should touch on: the absurdity. Florida is the third most populated state in the country, behind only New York and California. Florida had all of its votes counted within 2 hours. 2 hours. Now, why can't Arizona and Nevada do the same? Because that's where the balance of power in the Senate is being held up once again, as it was 2 years ago, by Nevada and Arizona, which aren't even in the top 10 in terms of the most populated states. I think Nevada's in the 30s. Why in the world? I was watching a news broadcast last night that said in the election that took place during the war between the states, they had all of the ballots counted faster than this. That's with the war raging, and they were doing it by candlelight and by hand.
Right.
And they were still able to do it.
Yeah, no, that's actually a topic I wanted to bring up right off the bat. There's, as you mentioned, there's a lot of angles that we could cover, you know, sort of dissecting and looking at this most recent election. But I got to get your take just right off the bat. What are your thoughts on voter fraud and the legitimacy of American elections? I mean, how can we expect this election to be legitimate when there were so many anomalies and problems with the 2020 election? I think this mail-in ballot situation, I mean, this is just ripe for fraud and exploitation and abuse by corrupt forces operating in America. And the same goes for these electronic voting machines. Why haven't these issues been rectified or even addressed? I don't know why the Republicans haven't made this like – I mean, I guess they have to a certain extent with the 2020 election, and now they're called election deniers. But, I mean, there are some very serious problems with the way America's elections are conducted. And to me, it just raises – the legitimacy of any of these elections into question in my mind anyways, and I think a lot of people around the country.
Well, I'm absolutely skeptical, and it's certainly skeptical when it increases your skepticism when it's happening in the exact same two states that turned the tide against Trump. I think you can probably remember, maybe a lot of your listeners can as well. We went to bed, if you're a Trump guy, and I did vote for Trump twice. He was a mixed bag, and we could debate the pros and cons of Trump for days. But when we went to bed on the evening of the election in 2020, it looked like he had defended himself and that he was going to win re-election. And then, of course, throughout the middle of the night, all of the ballots came in, and purportedly, and it was just a straight up. You watched the graph, the chart that showed the trajectory of the votes, and it just went straight up like a rocket for Biden at about 3 a.m. And this whole thing with mail-in balloting, the Republicans have got to stop that. I only vote on Election Day. Early voting for a month is a joke in and of itself. You have a month to vote early. Who in the hell can't find the time to vote in person when they give you a month to do it? Mail-in ballots should absolutely be banned, except for those who are severely ill and have some sort of a doctor's note saying that they can't possibly travel to vote in person, or if you're living abroad or in the military or something like that. That should be the only exceptions for mail-in ballots. And even then, you're going to have some fraud, but just anybody doing it and then dropping it off in post office type drop boxes in the middle of
districts. It's just unacceptable. It's ridiculous.
Well, I saw Tucker mention this last night. So again, the balance of power is hinging on what happens in Nevada and Arizona. I was watching Tucker last night, and in the middle of his broadcast, he said that Clark County, now this is the heavily Democratic area, this is Las Vegas area, the only area in Nevada that's deep blue, the rest of it's light to dark red. And it just came in while Tucker was live on television that they had reported that this was, what, 2 days after the election? a day after the election, anyway, reported that they have just located, they just found 50,000 ballots in drop boxes in a heavily Democratic area that they had missed before. And the GOP candidate, led by 20,000 at that time.
Yeah, see, stuff like this. I mean, what you just explained, that sort of thing was happening left and right in the 2020 election, you know, as we went to bed, as you mentioned. And now, you know, you see some of the same tricks being played. And I just have a hard time buying this. I have a hard – well, especially going back to 2020, I have a very, very hard time entertaining the idea, let alone accepting it, that Joe Biden received, what do they say, over 81 million votes. I mean, this is just, frankly, gaslighting to the extreme. This is just simply unbelievable that anybody could take that seriously.
And the anecdotal evidence, John, of what we saw at those rallies. Now, I know that they tried to excuse the plandemic for that. I mean, Biden would have a couple of dozen people at his rallies. Trump would have thousands. And I think that's the reason that they were trying to make these drop boxes that popularized them. They're using COVID as the excuse. Well, that's not an excuse anymore, so why do they still exist? If it ever was legitimate, which I don't believe it to be, it's certainly not legitimate now. But this whole thing, the drop boxes, somebody's dropping off a piece of paper. I don't know who they are, and you don't know who they are, and they don't know who they are, but these votes are getting counted. The Republicans have got to stop mail-in balloting with rare exceptions, and they certainly got to stop this drop box nonsense. And again, it's only in the states.
And even the voting machines. I mean, why are we relying? I mean, we need to go back to the old school way of voting. I mean, it's very simple. You show up. I mean, the vast majority of people, if you are interested and dedicated enough to voting, you need to show up on election day with your state issued ID to prove your residence, to prove who you are.
As I did.
And you cast your ballot, and that's it. And yeah, you might have to stand in line for a little bit, but that's part of the process. And if you can't sacrifice one day out of the year to be, you know, politically engaged in this process, then you have no business voting. We need to stop making excuses. And you see the way the Democrats have always tied in, you know, sort of liberalizing, you know, voting laws, where, you know, you can do the mail-in ballots, you can, you know, write in a ballot or whatever. It's all about and you know, the way they present, like, you know, actually showing an ID to go vote, like after having like some sort of
it's
racist.
Eagle.
It's yeah, they call it. Yeah, it's absurd. I mean, This is just unbelievable. And this has got to end. I mean, if the Republicans are ever going to win again in a big time way, or any other potentially emerging political movement or political party in America, these sorts of laws have got to change because they are just ripe for exploitation and corruption and outright voter fraud. And I think there's plenty of evidence, whether it's anecdotal or legitimate evidence, to demonstrate that.
Yeah, the American Free Press, going back to the spotlight days, have been talking about vote fraud and vote scam with these electronic balloting apparatuses. Yeah, that's something that we've been concerned about.
That's a bread and butter issue for the newspaper. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's nothing compared to the amount of fraud that you could expect with regards to these drop boxes and all this weird stuff. Which again, it seems to be anytime it comes up, it's in a swing state and it's in a Democratic area, and that's it always seems to happen there. And it's not
in the big cities as well, like the big metro areas largely controlled by the Democratic apparatus. Yeah.
Which is where the Democrats live. They live in cities. They don't live in the rural areas.
Right.
But that all being said, so yes, I'm skeptical. I mean, my God, I mean, who couldn't be? We live in a country as degenerate as to say that you're evil if you are opposed to the mutilation of child genitals. I mean, everything that this country has stood, that's just one example of a million I could give you right now. Any country that could do what this country has done. You think a country that engages in legitimate Holocaust like happened in Dresden, a country that engages in color revolutions, illegal wars all over the world. You think a country that debased, that amoral, would have a problem rigging its own elections or have any sort of moral qualms with rigging its own elections for candidates who will be in favor of the existing system and the existing order? Of course, any nation as corrupt as this wouldn't have a problem doing that. Why would we not be corrupt at home if we're that corrupt abroad? Of course, they would do that if they could get away with it. They probably have. We don't know for sure. I don't have the smoking gun, but yes, I'm skeptical. Now, all that being said, I want to go back to the big picture here with these things. Big takeaway is that it appears as though this thing's going to will have been fought to a draw. Wasn't a huge Republican win, but they are going to take the House and quite possibly the Senate. The status quo prevailed. I was talking about red states getting redder, blue getting bluer, has prevailed everywhere except for Florida, where Florida was just awash in red. I mean, what DeSantis did there was remarkable. Federneck won in Pennsylvania. They elected Shapiro as their Jewish governor. The Senate is still a jump ball because, again, as we were just mentioning, Nevada and Arizona, but also Georgia, where, I mean, could you imagine somebody in Georgia 100 years ago imagining the Senate was going to come down to Raphael Warnock and Herschel Walker? I mean, for God's sake.
Right.
But you mentioned the governor's races. Incumbents did tend to win in most places. The Democrats picked up seats in Maryland, Massachusetts, but there was left wing, they call them moderate Republicans, leaving office, okay, not even running for re-election. So the Democrats just took their natural seat. Gretchen Whitmer defended herself and won re-election in Michigan. Ron DeSantis rolled in Florida, went from winning by 0.3% of the vote in his first term to winning by 20 points, the most historic win in the history of Florida. But again, as I said, if it had gone another way, if the Democrats had taken hold of the Senate and the House, this is what I was trying to articulate earlier, it would have been a disaster. That's why we should care about the Republicans winning and not let the bad times roll. Because, again, nuke the filibuster. Without the filibuster, all sorts of awful things can be passed by a simple majority, like amnesty for illegal aliens, the continuation of the funding of the situation in the Ukraine. In contrast, the Republicans winning the House narrowly will, regardless of what happens in the Senate, Joe Biden's going to be, because the Senate's not going to can't do anything without the House approving it first. So the Republicans taking the House narrowly is a big deal because, and they have done that. It's not official, but they are going to do that. Biden's going to become a lame duck for the next 2 years. And you can have people like Marjorie Taylor Greene. They're going to have much more leverage, okay, John? to block aid to Ukraine and things like that, and the filibuster will remain intact. Here's why I think it, I said before that it might have been a best case scenario for people like us. And I don't know. I do vote. I don't have any faith that we're going to vote our way out of this mess, of this late stage decline of America. I don't know if there's a future for our people, if we're going to vote our way into that future. I do believe that our people are going to be okay and that we're going to turn this thing around, but I don't know if it's going to happen that way. I think that this whole system is going to have to collapse, and I think that this system will collapse. I think
we're seeing it collapse as we speak, as each day goes forward, yeah.
It is, and the divide is widening, okay? The partisanship, the sheer contempt that each side has for one another, you're never going to have a united America again. And I do vote, but I vote in hopes that it will continue to raise the political stress level until we have an event, whatever that event may be, to where there can be some sort of restoration or reclamation of America's destiny. And so for me, the Republicans winning narrowly just keeps everything. If the Republicans had won handily, as they were, I think some people, and I kind of bought into it in a way, looking at it now, I kind of see why it didn't happen. And we've covered some of it. But if the Republicans had just run roughshod over everything, I think a lot of our people get relaxed again, as we saw during the Trump years. There has been so much awakening on the base level of the Republican voter since Biden has been in office. This isn't the purpose of the interview today, but we've talked about it on my program for the last couple of years. There are poll after poll after poll after poll. Not our polls. These are the system polls, the polls that are always touted when you're given the results of any given poll that suggest and prove, and it's data driven, that the Republican base is moving our way on racial issues, on issues like immigration. The majority of Trump voters saying that race and ethnicity is important to them. The majority of Trump voters now saying that they and their state would be better off if their state seceded. These are things that were unfathomable.
Well, and they also recognize the idea of the Great Replacement, which is yes. A reality. So, yeah, no, I completely agree. And that is an issue you have been covering very, very well on the program. And it's very encouraging. So I get you. OK, so here's a question for you. So and you sort of alluded to this, but I mean, leading up to this election, we have obviously very, very dismal, you know, economic prospects and major financial problems, spiraling inflation, widespread distrust of the mass media and the political establishment in general, particularly the Democrats. Major frustration with the Biden administration and, you know, Democrat, control over politics, the January 6th show trials and the hearings and all the nonsense, major corruption at the FBI, brazen corruption at the federal level. That's a topic that we could go on and on about. So I guess what I'm saying is there's all these problems facing the country. How did this not translate into a GOP sweep of these elections? And probably the bigger question is, are the Republicans themselves to blame for this predicament?
I don't think so. John. I think that the reason, and we did touch on this earlier, I think the reason, I mean, it did defy conventional wisdom, but then you got to think, who's voting for these other people? It's not people like me and you. It's not people that you can reason with or bring about. These are people that are too far gone. Have you looked at what the typical Democratic voter looks like and what they stand for? And this whole thing with the devastating economy, you know, outside of the elite class, the people who are voting for the Democrats aren't your average day laborer, right? I mean, they're not somebody that's going to work. These are people that are grifting off the system and being subsidized by the taxpayers. So it doesn't harder. As I said, they're recession proof. So it doesn't bother them that the economy's in the tank. These aren't the producers to begin with. Doesn't bother them that there's rampant crime. They're the ones committing it. Okay. So that's why you're not dealing with the America of the Reagan era, where it's still a vastly majority white country and our problems are shared to some extent by one person's problem is everybody's problem type of situation. So, you know, it did at that night until I started thinking about it. And then this is what the Democrats are. This is who they are. This is what they want. This is what they're voting for. It doesn't it doesn't affect them. So, you know, It would affect people like us. We can't understand how people couldn't do it unless you're the ones benefiting from it or the ones that are perpetrating it. And so that I think explains it to an extent But I would like to say, though, and I didn't finish my thought a moment ago, with how it looks as though this is beginning to play out. And again, the House hasn't officially been called yet. The Senate still teeters on a knife's edge, and that could go either way. It could go any way. I mean, especially with – I mean, what in the hell is going on in Arizona? They're up to 70% of the vote counted when every other state has turned it in, 70%. Are they manufacturing ballots? Is that what's slowing down things? I don't know. I'm just asking. And in Nevada as well. But if the Republicans had gotten a big, big win, I think a lot of our people might have gone back into a state of dormancy by them barely taking the House. I'll tell you what good that does, John, is that gives the ostensibly, implicitly pro-white section of the GOP Congress, the GOP House, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Paul Gosar, some of these others, a handful of them, that really gives them a lot more leverage over Kevin McCarthy with regard to things like aiding the war in Ukraine. They're going to have to deal now with Kevin McCarthy and the House leadership is going to have to deal with Marjorie Taylor Greene and people like that. And there is a small but vocal a faction of Republicans who really are beginning to stand up on our issues. So for the first time in my life, I've never seen this before. But it does correlate with the trends that we're seeing in the base itself.
Speaking of that, can I just briefly interrupt you real quick? Because I read this article earlier from the Associated Press, and it sort of offers a glimpse into the GOP and sort of the there's been like a civil war sort of brewing within the GOP really since Trump stepped foot on the political stage and sort of created this like MAGA movement versus like the more establishment GOP represented by like a guy like Mitch McConnell or Kevin McCarthy for that matter. And this is just an excerpt here. I wanted to get your take. House GOP leader Kevin McCarthy, who was in line to seize the speaker's gavel from Pelosi next year if Democrats lose power, and it does look like that is going to be the case. He's recruited the most racially diverse class of House GOP candidates with more women than ever. But it also has a new cadre of Trump loyalists, including election skeptics and deniers, some of whom were around the Capitol on January 6th. And so, again, it sort of is just like underscoring and highlighting this split within the GOP, where you don't really see this amongst the Democrats, at least not to the extent that you do with the Republicans, right?
Well, that hurt them too, by the way. I mean, and I noticed that. That was actually that's a very good point you bring up. That was something that I was talking about with friends the night of and the day after the election, was that this seemed to be, and again, it's just like any institution. There is a very big difference between the leadership and those who sit at the head table versus the people who are voting for Republicans. There's a big difference between Mitch McConnell and Kevin McCarthy and your average Republican voter in the South, for instance, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
And again, you are starting to get some representation in Congress, in actual elected officials who aren't afraid. I mean, for God's sake, Paul Gosar spoke at a pro-white conference. I think Green did too. So And they're not afraid to use the word white. I mean, that even Trump never used the word white when talking about what he was going to do for everybody. He would say what he's going to do for the gays, what he's going to do using – this is how he would describe them. I'm going to do this for the gays and this for the blacks. And but he never said what I'm going to do for the whites until right after he lost.
Well,
after
see,
he was
that's –
told he lost.
Yeah,
now
see –
now you're getting Republicans who are. And,
right.
To the thing with – yeah, the whole thing, your question McCarthy bringing in this diverse roster of Republican candidates, it cost them in some places, I think. And again, don't let that, though, blackpill you. I mean, yes, Kevin McCarthy's no good. I would like to see him challenged, you know, as Speaker. But he and McConnell aren't speaking for the entire Republican Party. They're certainly not speaking for the base. So, yes, I get it. The Republicans ran on, hey, we're not racist. That was, you know, kind of the platform in a lot of cases.
Yeah,
and,
that was definitely like the establishment GOP's narrative. They're lying.
Yeah, that's their
and
narrative.
You saw like Lindsey Graham like up there with Herschel Walker. Look at this awesome black guy we have running for us. Like it's so pathetic.
It's
what kills
you brought
me.
That up because if you look at the places where the Republicans closed, Brian Kemp is a cuck. I mean, he's not very good at all. But he did defeat Stacey Abrams handily. And J.D. Vance took his Senate seat. Okay. The Republicans, where they weren't able to close the deal, was in these high profile races, these very contentious races. Herschel Walker and Dr. Oz. Well, Herschel Walker and Dr. Oz are non-white. So, you know, they didn't seal the deal. I wonder if it's, a case of the Republicans refusing to hunt where the ducks are with regards to these candidates. So why did Brian Kemp win outright against Stacey Abrams, but Herschel Walker was not able to win outright against Raphael Warnock? You would think that, hey, if the Republicans are going in, they're going to vote for the top of the ticket. They're going to go right down. United States Senate and state governor is going to be on every ballot in that district. Why could Kemp beat Abrams with 50% plus one or over 50%, and Herschel Walker couldn't beat Warnock? And I think that difference, that 1 or 2% difference, is white people refusing to vote for Herschel Walker.
Good point. I think you're making a good point. I'm looking at the official statistics from Reuters right now. These are the most up-to-date stats. Brian Kemp received over 2.1 million votes, 53.4%, and Herschel Walker received about 1.9 million.
So 300,000 difference.
Yeah, so a major, and that's nothing to sneeze at. That's a good chunk of voters, especially in a state like Georgia.
Not only is it not anything not to sneeze at, that's the difference in the Republicans owning the Senate today and it going down to a runoff now in December, which is going to be what happens. And, hide and watch and see what happens there.
Yes.
But no, so that's the thing. I think this is a key thing that nobody else, of course, in the media is talking about, because they're not going to touch something like this. But if the Republicans had not been so cucky and nominated just even a milquetoast white guy like Kemp, that's all he is. I mean, he's not Pat Buchanan or anything, for God's sake. He's awful in a lot of ways, but you could probably count on him to, or people like him, to hold the line in the Senate with regards to really some of our issues. I think that's the difference. You're talking about 300,000 votes. That's the difference between Walker winning and going to a runoff, or the GOP winning the Senate in Georgia and going to a runoff. And I think he probably had, out of 3 million, 2 million votes cast, thereabouts, for both candidates, you probably had 100,000 or 200,000 white guys that say, listen, I ain't voting for this, low IQ and Walker. I mean, he may or may not be a nice or a good guy. I don't know him personally, but, you know, hey, it's a joke. They say this all the time about people they don't like. What qualifications does he have? But truly, the Republican Party of Georgia, a southern state, could have done better than that. And you say, James, in 2020, because you had a white guy running then and he lost. Well, that's because Trump told people not to go vote in the runoff. That's what happened there.
I think Herschel Walker's in there just because he came out and supported Trump, and the GOP was like, well, wasn't he a big Trump supporter, I think?
I think that was the big reason why. And I would rather him win than Warnock. I'm not saying
– Right, right.
I'm not trying to be cute here. I mean, between the two – bad choices, I'm going to take Walker, because I know Warnock is going to give me nothing. Walker may give me something, and that something's better than nothing. So I do hope that they win that seat, but I think they would have already won it, as they won the governorship, if they had not done, back to your point, what Kevin McCarthy wanted to be sure that they did, and that's have this rainbow coalition of diversities running. And outside of some Hispanics that won, and Hispanics have been moving more to the right too, by the way, because the left has just gotten so bizarre on transgenderism and crime and things like that. But outside of Hispanics, I don't know of any black Republicans that broke through that weren't already in there, like Tim Scott in South Carolina or something like that. So, yeah, this whole diversity is great. And diversity is good. Look at us. Vote for us. We're not racist. It wasn't a winning combination in Pennsylvania and in Georgia, which were two hugely important races. So,
well, that brings me to another question. What is an effective and winning political strategy for a Republican, or just in general? I mean, what are the issues that Americans care about in 2022 and leading into the next election?
You can't ask that question, though. That is an impossible question to answer, because there's not one America.
Well,
there are
that's
two
true.
Americas. There are two Americas now, so what exactly half the country would say is important to them is
almost the opposite.
To the other half.
Yeah, almost. Yeah, exactly. Almost the opposite, or totally foreign. You know, to the other half. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. You're right. I mean, it is a very much divided country. But you look at like the. I guess what I'm getting at is to the base of the GOP, the people that are actually still going out there and voting for Republican candidates. What do they care about?
Immigration.
Immigration,
these
crime.
These are people who work for a living, so they're going to care about the economy. They're going to care about inflation. I mean, who couldn't? You're paying twice as much for gas as we were the last time we went to vote. Groceries are out of control. I mean, everything. I mean, whatever you're spending money on, the inflation is awful. Unemployment's bad. So economy is always the number one issue. You know, beyond that, immigration. Immigration and the economy would be the two biggest issue for conservative Republicans. I mean, I just think there's no doubt about that. They care about social issues, too. I mean, that was a big thing that helped them in some of these elections, like, you know, Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. They do care about critical race theory in schools. They do care about transgenderism being taught to the, you know, kindergartners and, you know, their lower level elementary school kids. And so all of that, you know, is still there. But that's you know, so that all of that's important to them. I mean, you know, you see on the news all the time, what are the top issues? I mean, those are top issues for Republicans. Then, of course, you know, there may be top issues for the Democrats as well, but it's going to be on the completely other end of the spectrum. And there's just going to be, there's never going to be any reconciling. I mean, this is not, we are at a level of discontent that I think in many ways surpasses the level of discontent we had during the war between the states. I mean, at least then, at least after that was over, you still had a country that was the same race.
You still had a nation. Yeah, you still had an actual nation, which is, you know, basically ethnic-based or racially-based. I mean, that goes to the root of what the word nation actually means. America is not a nation. America is basically a multiracial empire at this point.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know, because there's a difference between a nation and a country. A country is just a geographical plot of land with a government.
A nation is a people.
A nation is a race.
Yeah. Shared ethnicity.
We could go back to then to where we had some commonality. There is no commonality anymore. I have nothing in common with a left-wing Democrat. There is not one issue where I say, you know what, this unites us. We're together on this. There is not one. I think the divide is greater than it was before the war. In 1861 through 65. And I don't think it's going to ever be put back together. I think this level of contentiousness, the political stress level, and this is something that, you know, that is monitored. I mean, this is something that people try to get a read on. I mean, it's a real thing. The political stress level of a community or of a nation or of a country or whatever you want to call it. And once the political stress level reaches a certain height, there has to be an event to like a volcano to settle things out. We had that with the war between the states, and it's at that level again now. And that's just not hyperbole. I mean, there have been some, you know, some sort of, however you track these things or however you test it, that's what the results are basically suggesting. And
well, James, I mean, I think we've basically had a sort of like low scale civil war in this country going back to 2015, 2016. I mean, look at like a Trump rally.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's outright political violence on the streets of America that took place across the country. Look at the whole summer of 2020. How is that not a genuine like insurrection, a genuine low scale civil war taking place on the streets of America between two completely divided in very hostile groups of people, at least hostile on the far left, like radical side anyways. I mean, that to me is, I mean, America is basically in a low scale civil war that sometimes spills over onto the streets. And, you know, at a time like now, not really so much, but there's always that potential for some explosive event to happen, like a George Floyd type situation where, you know, next thing you know, your city's being burned down.
Yeah, no, you're right. It has been a low level type of situation like that, an unofficial. The only thing holding America together again is this facade of an economy that we've got. Once that falters, once that breaks, it's going to be completely up for grabs, and this thing will fall apart. Look, and that's not just me hoping that it does. I'm a husband and a father. I've got three kids. I don't want to see anarchy or chaos. I don't want my children as a father. I don't want my children to to live in a situation or have to exist in a situation where there, you know, there's danger around every corner. I don't want that, but I know you look throughout history, no empire stands the test of time. No decadent Caligula style, country like we've got now is going to make it forever. No country stands the test of time. No nation, no, especially no empire stands the test of time. There's always going to be a balkanization. There's going to be an upheaval, you know, countries taking off pieces of other countries. You know, it's always happened and it will continue to happen. This thing will fall apart. Whether it falls apart, I don't know what the catalyst will be, if it's within the next couple of years, 5 years, 10 years. It will probably happen in our lifetime that this thing is going to fall apart, that there's going to be a restructuring and a reorder. I don't know if that includes a balkanization of the United States or what that looks like. But this idea that we're going to continue on forever as you know, the 50 states as we see it on the map now, one people. I mean, we're already not one people. And you know, when making it official, having that divorce is in the best interest, because we're never going to persuade them to come back to our ideas. And their ideas are so abhorrent and just anti-God, anti-science, anti-nature, anti-decency that, you know, I mean, I don't have any desire to really make peace or be around them. I would prefer separation. And so for me, I think this thing where it's just, it all teeters on that knife's edge is good for keeping the stress level high politically and for keeping everything at a fever pitch. And you were talking, we were talking before we went on tonight about, you know, the future of Trump now in light of all this. Well, again, I don't think it was as bad. It doesn't look as bad now as it did on Tuesday night. If you're a Republican and if the GOP is where you place your hope, it did make a difference. We explained this. It does make a difference that they control the House. You don't want the Democrats having a Senate majority you know, that can bypass Manchin and Sinema's a love of the filibuster. So it does make it is better for the Republicans to have won. But with regards to Trump, you know, does he still announce his presidency in his run for reelection rather in another week, as was rumored? Or, you know, how much has DeSantis's profile been increased as a result of what happened in Florida? And make no mistake about it, that was remarkable. That was remarkable. And that's something that deserves to be rewarded. Here's my take on that. I got two takes. Ron DeSantis being the Republican nominee for president 2024 would be the best thing for the Republican Party. Donald Trump running again would raise the political stress level and create additional instability. And I prefer the latter. I prefer the latter. I think Trump is a guy that just completely, I mean, DeSantis is more of a conventional Republican, a governor, an administrator. There's a lot about DeSantis I like. But I think Trump just gets under the left so badly that it causes them to make tactical errors. Burning down all of those cities with those riots for 6 months leading up to the election in 2020 really open the eyes of a lot of rank and file whites across America to the racial realities that we face. That those eyes would not have been awakened had it not been for Trump. Again, some of the things Trump has gifted us might have been inadvertent. But between the two scenarios, I would prefer to see Trump run again. I mean, obviously, I don't want the Democrats to win, but I think it's in our interest that we keep this thing to. Yeah, I know it's playing with fire, but you want to keep a certain level of instability and the political stress high, because, you know, in a perfect scenario, and it's unlikely to happen this way, the left would secede from us. We wouldn't be fighting to keep them if they fought to keep us the last time around. That would be a dream scenario if the blue states would somehow. But of course, that's, you know, again, not going to happen, but that would be a dream. But they do make mistakes when they're rattled. And I think that the Floyd things were a mistake for them. And I think that they've made a lot of mistakes that they wouldn't have made had the Republicans party been left in the safe arms of system candidates like Jeb Bush or somebody right. like that.
Yeah, no, I tend to agree with you. I think Trump is very much a unique political actor. Love him or hate him, I mean, he's a very different political actor than anybody else on the stage right now. And getting back to like the future of Trump and the MAGA wing of the Republican Party, Paul Angel had a very interesting personal in this current edition of American Free Press, which, by the way, is issue 47 and 48. It's going to be published tonight, and it's going to be mailed out to subscribers next Monday, which is, I believe, November 14th, which is the day that he was rumored actually to announce his candidacy. So we'll see if that happens. But anyways, getting back to that, it seems that there are many within the GOP that are basically like frustrated with Trump, and they're losing faith in him, losing trust in him, and basically see him as causing more harm than good. And I'm curious, I mean, what's your take on that? Is it time for him to maybe step back? I don't see him, frankly, doing that. But it seems like there's some within the GOP that are sort of hinting at that. And also, as a related question, he has really been like the main leader of the GOP, despite, you know, what Mitch McConnell or Kevin McCarthy or any of these other cucks would say. He really has been like the backbone of the Republican Party.
Oh yeah, no. Imagine a GOP without Trump. Had he never descended the golden escalator in 2015, you would have had Jeb Bush likely as your nominee. Somebody like that. I don't know who would have beaten him. And he would have gotten thrashed by Hillary, and then you would have had 8 years of Hillary. I mean, are we in a better situation in that alternate timeline? I don't think so. And then you don't have any sort of racial awakening, because Trump did make it safe for people to start talking racially. And the way Trump was so irreverent with the media, the way he was called a racist, a Nazi, a white supremacist, a this, that, and the other every single day, every single day, and never backed down, it sort of lost. It caused that to lose the sting with the rest of the country. And then the rest of the country started to talk about these issues. And then you've got now members of Congress who are talking about these issues. Yeah, hell, even Ron DeSantis said that the situation at the Waukesha Christmas parade in Wisconsin, where you had the black maniac purposefully mowing down white people, murdering white people at the parade with his car. Ron DeSantis called that an anti-white attack. So that never happened. That would have never happened without Trump. And now you are getting politicians at least using the word. And my theory on that is most politicians are career opportunists. I don't think that there are very many politicians who are true believers with inflexible dedication to any given issue. I mean, most people are like that. Most people, there are very few people on either side of the political spectrum that are absolutely inflexible. They will either rise or fall taking a stand on what matters to them, come what may. Very few people are like that. Most people are going to go in the direction of the prevailing winds or the prevailing current, and are going to fall in line with whichever side is winning, whichever side gives them the opportunity to be fashionable or trendy or in vogue. And so if you see somebody like Ron DeSantis saying anti-white and things like that, that's good. So pat yourself on the back, because you're the reason he's doing it. And if he didn't feel as though he needed to keep up with his base, and this is true for a lot of them, he would go back to just being a tax cut Republican. And I like DeSantis, but this is just I'm just practically speaking here. So it doesn't matter to me at the end, I guess. I mean, I would prefer people to be true believers, of course. But I think what we're learning is if and when the day comes where we can apply more pressure and have more leverage over elected officials than our enemies do, then they'll fall in line and the rest of the people fall in line too. I mean, you see it all over the world. It's always like that. In Germany now, you go to jail if you question certain things. In 1939, every woman in Germany would have wanted to be with an SS officer. What changed? Who was in power? That's all that changed. So that's just human nature. That's just the way it is. And so, yeah, I think we can keep, you know, getting these people to come over to our way. And I don't think it was such a terrible night for Trump. I mean, if it plays out, and perspectives can change within a few hours, certainly within a few days or weeks. If by December the 6th, the Republicans have taken control of the House and the Senate, how's that not a win for Trump? It wasn't Trump's guys who were losing. I mean, well, I guess Dr. Oz was. I mean, he kind of sort of backed him, and he backed Herschel Walker, too. But I mean, you know, a lot of establishment Kevin McCarthy was behind those people too. And MAGA is still at least the
major force. Yeah.
Trend in the Republican Party. I mean,
right,
MAGA is
right.
Still,
yeah.
That's the rudder in the Republican Party.
Well,
still,
that's where all the energy is. That's what resonates with people. That sort of MAGA mindset. Yeah, I mean that's really where the GOP is at. And that's
if you don't believe
future.
It, just look at Trump's rallies. I mean, who what other candidate? Kevin McCarthy, Mitch McConnell. Who's going to get a crowd like that? Trump still brings the energy. And if he is going to do something though, and it is still the biggest ideology within the Republican Party right now. But if he is going to do something, he's got to do it. It's going to have to be now. It can't be next time. There is no next time. If he ran and if he won in 2024, he would be older when he goes into office than Biden was when he was inaugurated. So, I mean, he's obviously in better health than Biden still, but if he's going to do anything, this is his last chance to do it. And again, I think for the party, it would be better for DeSantis to run, but for us and for the grand scheme of things, not being so foolish as to believe what's good for the Republican Party is always good for us, I think it's better that Trump continue to needle the left and continue to break down these taboos, continue to be called a racist and show other people that you can be called that and survive and continue on with your life. And it's not the end of the world. There's a lot of good like that that came from Trump. And
absolutely.
Between the two, I think I would prefer Trump to make another go of it. Just because, again, I think it further radicalizes our people, and that's what we need.
I think you're making a lot of good points, and it's going to be interesting to see how this sort of shakes out, because clearly Ron DeSantis is a rising star. He's been rising, you know, for the past few years. I'm not too big on him, frankly. I mean, he does say some good things, and certainly I appreciate the way he handled the whole COVID crisis. I think he was by far the best, you know, governor anyways when it came to that. And he does say some good things, and he sort of has some Trumpian-type characteristics, I guess. But there seems to be, like, even a conflict brewing between these two characters, between Trump and DeSantis himself. So it's going to be interesting to see how things play out. And I understand a lot of the criticism leveled at Trump, how he lets his ego get in the way. I don't know if you've seen some of his recent comments about DeSantis, but he's apparently been saying that, you know, if he actually runs for president, he's going to release information about him and stuff like that. So, I don't know. That to me is very counterproductive and shows that for all of his, you know, for all the good things that I like about Trump, he still has a major problem with his ego. And I think it's going to hinder him ultimately. And I think that is what has always turned people off from Trump.
Did it though? I mean, it certainly didn't turn, you know, it didn't turn his voters off. It turned the people who were going to be against him anyway off. And yeah, I don't like the look when it's applied to DeSantis. It's hilarious when he does it to George or to George Bush or to Jeb Bush or to any of those characters. It's hilarious. We love the irreverency. And we like that. It's somebody that we have a little bit of common ground with. You know, it's a little bit, you know, I wish he hadn't done that. And yet DeSantis, like Trump, is a mixed bag. I mean, we all know DeSantis pledges his fealty to Israel and goes and wears the little hat and goes over there and does the shuck and jive like all politicians do. But he was great on COVID. I mean, he was really great on COVID. And he's been good on what's going on in the schools there. He's been good on you know, some other things. But he's still so young. I mean, he's practically my age. He's got little kids and a young wife. I mean, DeSantis will be politically relevant. I mean, I guess he'll only be governor of Florida for four more years because he can't run more than twice, or win more than twice. Yeah, but he would still be relevant for a long, long time, whereas this is Trump's last, you know, he's going to be too old. If he doesn't run, he's going to be 82 years old in 2026. That's just, you know, obviously not going to happen. But, you know, I don't know if they would be willing to form a ticket. I think there's been some people saying that Trump would, you know, Trump's going to carry Florida anyway. So why wouldn't he pick Kerry Lake and shore up his standing in Arizona, which was such an important loss for him in 2020. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see them get along. But, I mean, it will be between those two. There's going to be no other Republican nominee except for either Trump or DeSantis. So we'll just see where it goes.
Yes, sir. Well, hey, James, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. We covered a lot of ground, and got your expert political analysis and knowledge. So, yeah, thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
Well, listen, I want everybody out there to subscribe, resubscribe, buy a gift subscription, or if you're already doing all of that, it's we're coming up on the Christmas season. We got to remember to gift the people who are out there doing the work, truly the work that most Americans refuse to do. And that's what you and Paul Angel are doing. Couldn't be a bigger fan of the Barnes Review and the American Free Press. Folks, please do support the work of American Free Press and the Barnes Review.
Well, thanks, James. I appreciate it, man.
Hey, thank you, John. We'll talk again soon.
Okay, sounds good. You have a good one.
You too.
Bye.